It's the kind of Western cynicism that is the basis of science also. I'll entertain the hypothesis. No. That's cynicism. The null hypothesis. The null hypothesis. There is no relationship until I can demonstrate with a certain degree of probability that there is a relationship. And he did that thing and he cut through what had to be cut through. Now, did he sit there and say, like, well, here's this cat, I think I will remember, I will tell him that? No, that's thinking, that's knowing you know. He isn't there at all. He was just being. He was being a leaf on a tree, like, and I came along and there was in me a desire to get ahead, cut through my cynicism, and it was my desire which brought that thing out of him. It was my desire which brought that thing out of him. Now, this is very far out, and if you can grasp it, it's really very, very important. Very important. Because to be that pure energy is just a state of total being. And when I say you aren't who you think you are, it's because you define yourself in terms of doing versus being. Knowing you know, your thoughts. Your body and what it does. You say, I'm a lawyer, or I'm an architect, or I'm a hippie, or whatever you are. You define yourself in terms of social roles, in terms of actions. How do I know myself? As if I'm a behavior studying myself from outside. The fact of the matter is, when you go in and in and in and in and in and behind that role and that role and that role and that one too, you get to a place where you just are. Just pure isness. Pure isness. Pure awareness. Pure consciousness. Pure energy. If you really reside in that, then you live in Sat-Chit-Ananda. That means you no longer live in this time-space locus called the body. That's the beginning of what is, at the lower levels, is called astral travel. See, astral travel still means going from point A to point B. So it must mean there's some finite being that goes from A to B. The guru is beyond astral travel. He is point A and point B. That's when I said, if we knew who we really are, there'd only be one of us here. There is only one consciousness in the whole universe. And when you cut through the drama, you reside in that place, in this place, in here, in here, in here. Now, do you understand what chit means? Absolute knowledge. Absolute knowledge. I mean, can you imagine what you've been doing? You've been, when I said to you, there's nothing I can say you don't already know, you didn't believe me. You didn't really believe me. You thought I was putting you on. I mean, you are actually probably, and I do the same thing, you go into bookstores and you buy a book, like there's something in the book you aren't. You realize you're already the book. If you but knew. I mean, my teacher, he's a very pure being. He's not as high as the guru, but he's got a number of siddhis or powers. He'll take a book like this, he'll pick it up and... Yeah, there are some things in it that'll be helpful to you. You got to be around these people for quite a while before you understand they're not putting you on. In their world, there are no hypes. There's nothing but total truth, total purity, total purity. They live in the spirit. They live in this place. So what we are in is a journey called the evolution of consciousness. It is God coming to know himself, which finally becomes himself. Because you understand, let me show you the levels, the way it works. You're at the physical plane, where you're receiving vibrations at a certain rate, so all you see when you look around you in this room are other gross physical beings. You're not seeing any of the astral beings in this room at this moment, most of you. Some of you are. Some of you see the astral bodies in each other by seeing auras. Others of you don't see those auras. Some of you, when you see the aura, you think it's a trick that the light's playing on you, because you don't trust the processes that happen in you. Many of you are higher than you let yourself be most of the time. That's the fact of the matter. Most people are constantly having experiences where they break through the veil and they reject it almost all the time because it doesn't fit in with the existing model. It's always happening. The physical plane is the plane at which you're at this vibrational rate and you've got a body and you're... What keeps you there, now you've got to understand what I'm going to say about desire, is what keeps you there is your own desire. The only reason, like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, the beautiful, beautiful saint in India, Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna was in such a high state, he had a terrible time staying in his body. It was a terrible problem. He kept drifting off. And he had to keep creating desires in order to stay in his body, in order to hang out for his because his trip was to help people do their thing, I guess. I mean, I'm not in cosmic government, so I don't I don't recall giving him his assignment if I did. So he'd say, "I'm thirsty, get me a glass of water." And they get him a glass of water. He says, "Oh, I couldn't touch a drop." He said, "I thought you wanted a glass of water. I just wanted to want something to bring me back here. I had to be..." Those of you that don't understand, over there is a raised platform, and around it there is a pool that is filled with charcoal, but there's no water in it at the moment. And all that you hear, which sounds like horses in stables, is the charcoal, and somebody may have just fallen off the... It is desire, it is our desire that keeps us in this physical plane. I'll explain more about that in a second. Now there's a physical plane, and when you have finished with the desires that keep you with the physical plane, when you have finished with that level of desire, then you move into the next plane, which is called the astral plane. And the astral plane is a plane where beings dwell just like you and me, except their desires are more subtle and the desires do not require that they have physical manifestations. And all the beings you've ever read about in all the nursery books and all of the fairy tales and the Bible and all these things about demons and devils and goblins and fairies and nymphs and Padmasambhava and all these, they're all hanging out at the astral plane. And they're all real. Because that plane is just as real as this is. It's just another cut, another vibrational cut. just another vibrational cut. And if you can go from what happens to most people, like we've all witnessed recently the drama of James Pike and his son Jim. And Jim shot himself and then, or died somehow, I guess he shot himself, and then he was in contact with his father after across the plains through a medium. A medium is a being who can tune in on the astral plane. Now what happens is this astral plane, this next level out, has a number of layers to it. You've got to understand that all the time we in the West were busy charting the moon and the trip to the moon and how to work in the frontiers of the West and how to dig into the ocean. There have been a lot of guys who have been busy charting the inner world and these other domains, and there are beautiful maps and charts if you can read them, if you have enough faith to be able to open yourself to be able to see what they're about. So there are many, many, many levels. You could probably, in most of the Sanskrit literature, there's 6 or 7 levels above this one. The first one out is what is in the Christian Bible called heaven and hell. And it's that kind of a level. It's got all those things in it. See, the Lord, the Christian Lord, is a manifestation. He's got his throne, and he's got his angels, and all that seen around him. That's all astral. That's all astral. And as Bhagavad Gita says, those that pray to the gods, go to the gods. If you desire to go to heaven, that's where you go, to heaven, which is the first plane of the astral plane. It's a very groovy place to go. There's 6 more above it, so don't get too hung up there, but it's a nice place. Certainly good. Good people go there. Persian Rumi says, I died as mineral and became a plant. I died as plant and rose to animal. I died as animal and I was man. Why should I fear? When was I ever less by dying? Yet once more I shall die as man to soar with angels blessed. But even from angelhood I must pass on. All except God doth perish. When I have sacrificed my angel soul, I shall become what no mind e'er conceived. Oh, let me not exist, for non-existence proclaims in organ tones, to him we shall return. God and that fine energy and Padmasambhava and your Atma, it's all the same stuff. All the same thing. It's behind it all. It's behind the physical plane, behind the astral plane, and we got one more plane to go. We got the causal plane. The causal plane is what Plato was talking about. It's a plane of pure ideas. And the planes are like this. They're each plane subsumes the next planes. When you finish with the grossest desires that keep you here on the physical plane, then you're left with a lot of subtle desires. Like, you want to be God of the wind? Baby, you're going to be God of the wind. I mean, you don't realize how it's all going to come out. Wait till you see. It's really going to blow your mind. You're going to be everything you ever wanted to be. That's the funny part about the astral trip. You do it all yet. Everybody does it all. It's in store for everyone. Don't worry about it. You don't have to be chosen. You can be anything you want. At the astral plane, you can create your universes. You're given that privilege. You're also given the wisdom to know how to not screw it up. Because your ego's gotten very subtle, very subtle. There's still desire, and as long as there's desire, there's still ego. As long as there's desire, there's still an astral plane. Your desire creates your universe. That's the rule of thumb. Desire creates the universe, be it physical, astral, or causal. So you get finished with the gross things that keep you on the astral plane. I mean, you really want to have that full color experience. You want to travel like light. You want to bathe in ambrosial bliss. You want to hang on to bliss because it feels so good? Sure, man, you're going to have plenty of chance. Then you got to give that one up, too. Got to give that one up, too. I have a guru brother who is in the Himalayas. He is in a cave in the Himalayas. He is a 23-year-old Westerner from Laguna Beach. Okay. Except he happens to be a very high being. I'll tell you why, who's what in a second. He is spending most of his time in this cave on the astral plane. He's doing his astral work at the moment. Because the rules of this game are, when you start the trip, as you get purer, as your mind gets calmer through meditation, as you learn to work with the energies, you can easily get out of the time-space locus and the gross physical plane, then you go into the next plane. But you got a lot of work to do there because it's very seductive and you got to go a lot of trips there, just like you're going trips here. And if you do enough, you can do the whole thing through the physical, causal, astral, and causal all in one lifetime. Once you're on the path, if you just don't get caught in the cul-de-sacs. And this is what he has to say about this. He's in this cave in the Himalayas. This is his letter to me. Crystal clear illumination. Here we are, sitting in the flowers, rock, raindrop, birds, fire, spring of light. Last night we tuned the sitar to the morning star, and the goddess herself came in dazzling brilliance as mind dances Sahajananda, great Ananda, great bliss. Vastness, effortlessness, emptiness, wrapped up in two hands hold hot wooden bowl of chai, tea, with wisps of mist and steaming jade. Baba Ram Das Ji, that's me, is nowhere to be found, but a hollow bamboo is growing outside the window. Who could have imagined that right from the first, mind is absolutely pure? Delight in the exquisiteness of every single level. You must take joy in your maleness or femaleness at the same moment as realizing you are both male and female and you were never either male nor female. That far out. That far out. And if you get attached to being unattached, too bad. You got a long way to go. I said before, you can't rip it off. It's like the snake skin. It's got to fall away. It's got to fall away like the skin of a snake falling off. It's the only way it can happen. The only way it can happen. We can't rush it. I mean, I really understand how this all is, but you see, my intellect's way ahead of where I'm at. I mean, it's so poignant. It's so poignant. I mean, knowing all this, I should be an enlightened being. But there's still desires, and they get more and more subtle, and every time you finish with one, it just uncovers a new one. I mean, there are the gross desires I've got, lusting for root beer and, you know, all of the things that still take me on my trip. Can't rip them away. I just can't not desire root beer. What am I going to do? Not desire root beer? Try it. Funny thing. I mean, vows are complete hypocrisy. You can't take vows about things. You either do them or you don't do them. You think an external vow is going to change the game? It can only change the external act. The external act has nothing to do with renunciation whatsoever. You can be having sex every night and have renounced sex. Because what you're renouncing is the attachment. And in fact, tantric sex is the highest form, is a very, very high yoga. And it's the yoga of using the sexual energies to become one with God, to go into these higher states. And when you start on any of these trips, be it yoga, I mean hatha yoga, or bhakti yoga, or gyan yoga, or karma yoga, or psychedelic yoga, or tantric yoga, you'll always go into places where you'll get big shots of bliss. Oh, boy, is it good. Remember what my guru brother said. Some people get attached to digging the ecstasy bliss. So good, man. I mean, I just haven't... All my life, I've been reaching for that kind of bliss. Sex gave me a little wallop of it. A great achievement would give me a little wallop. Little bit of a drop of this elixir, the stuff, the ambrosia that Padmasambhava's holding a big bowl of. Man, I really dig that bliss. Oh, boy, have I been starved for bliss. I mean, you know what bliss is? It's total contentment, total serenity. And how does that feel? You've got it all. It's like after you've eaten the best possible meal and you sit back. You know, it's like those ads of a guy that's worked hard and he comes back and he's loosened his belt and he's taken off his shoes. He's a workman. He's got his beer on the table and he's sitting back and he's got his feet up and he's, oh, you know. I can see the Norman Rockwell cover now. That's the definition of contentment. That's the eternal place. No matter what he's doing. I mean, everything he did all day up to that moment, he's still in that place when you're in the place. See, that's what I said about if we know who we are, we're not busy being in the drama. You can just know what you have known from tonight, knowing this. If you know this, you're already well, well, well along the way, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you from another guy who's just along the way with you. But I got a feeling for how it all unfolds, although there's no time in it. See, I used to be busy. People said, well, if your guru knows everything, did you ask him when you'll be enlightened? Well, that's a funny question. Because when I'm with the guru, I don't have any questions. Because he's all in everything and there's nothing to ask because it's all right. And the funny thing is, what good is it knowing? What do I care? What difference does it make? It's like if you say, where did it all begin? I mean, how did we get stuck in this dilemma in the first place? And Buddha always answers, it's none of your business. Just get on with it. When you get there, you'll know. It's not for your trivial little rational mind to figure out. You know, you're a child when you grow up. Time enough for you to smoke. You know, don't rush. Don't rush. Just be. Be here now. See, once the seed is planted, then it becomes like what's called the witness inside of you. It's a place inside of you where you see your whole drama unfolding. You see how important you're making it all. How caught, how deep, how significant, how profound. All the euphemisms you've got for making it important. Now, this doesn't mean you trivialize life. It doesn't mean you care any less for its divinity or its sacredness or its beauty or its purity. You live it with grace and with exquisite compassion, being aware of its illusion and yet fully in it. If you ever watched a beautiful Zen monk, a very old monk who is like really there, here, really here, there, wherever it is. You watch him, he's cooking food, he's lifting rocks, he's moving. You watch him walk, and it's like nobody's walking. Do you ever watch one of those beings? They just walk and their legs are going and the whole thing's happening, but nothing's happening. You get a feeling nothing's happening. He's always a total rest, no matter what's happening. And that's what blows your mind when you get out of this, the kind of heads that we've got going, which don't allow us really to understand how this can be. You live out your karma. You live out your karma. The best I can tell you about karma is that if you are pure spirit, if you are not matter, but you are that eternal spirit, you are that eternal energy, you are going through a sequence, a series of illusions, if you will, that are training you to finish with illusion. And when you have finished going through all of the carnival sideshows, you begin to see that in fact the snake was only a rope. And these are a series of experiences designed. Your life, including your heredity, your environment, every experience you've had, every experience you're going to have, your death, the whole trip is one karmic package. And it is programmed, completely programmed, and you are going through it now. And if you understand what I just said, you then are in the position of the witness who watches your own karma happen, and that is your karma too. You got it? There's no level. There's no way out of karma. You got to understand. There's no way out. There's no way out. Except full enlightenment. When you're fully enlightened, you're done with your karma. Fully. Not for a second. Not for a second. Fully. Finish with the trip. Fully enlightened. Once one understands the possibility, once the seed has been planted, one starts to look for the ways. The ways to get on with the journey, since you suddenly realize, you don't suddenly, but it dawns slowly upon you, that's the only journey there is. There's nothing else to be doing. People say, "Why? Who are you?" I say, "I'm somebody who's doing sadhana. I'm on my spiritual path." Say, "Why do you do it?" And I say, "Because that's all there is to do. Nothing else to do. What am I going to do, go out and have fun?" Go out and have fun? This is part of my spiritual path, what I'm doing right now. This is my work, because all the time, it's not like, I'm not lecturing to you, I'm doing my mantra, I'm keeping centered, I'm watching this drama unfold, I'm working on myself. And every now and then when I'm talking, I get so fascinated with the sound of my own words, I go fast asleep. I get caught in the illusion, and I suck you in too. And here we all are, and there's a speaker, and there's listeners, and here we are in the drama. We all forgot we're just playing Hamlet. And then I feel this thing in my fingers. Oh, wow, God, look, I did it again. More root beer. I mean, you're addicting. You're addicting to me. You know, you're hooking me on my desire to try to share with you my experience. That's a trap. That's a desire. That's keeping me here, unfortunately. I mean, when my guru brother said, some people get hung up spreading the light, that's my trip. I mean, I can't not do this. This is my thing, because this is my karmic package. All I can do is watch it with absolute horror. Horror. The terrible beauty of nature, we say to one another in the Himalayas. Dig the terrible beauty of nature. Poor Ram Dass. You know, he's got to be doing that thing.
That's good work.
See how seductive it is?
I mean, that's good. It's important that he does that.
You've helped me a great deal. I've really been helped a lot. Thank you. Thank you.
Who are they thanking? Who are you thanking? There's no me. Thank you. Great. Here we are. Should we play thank you? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. There's no thank you. It's just happening. I don't care. I don't really care. Who I am, it all happened already. Your whole karmic trip's already programmed. I'm just a part of it. There's no accidents. It's not an accident that you're here. It's not an accident that the guy that was sitting there that couldn't quite got up and left. It's not an accident. It's all programmed. It's all part of it. All part of it. No accidents. Can you imagine that? No accidents. Got to stand back pretty far to see that. So there are methods, and you'll find the methods, and they're all around you. In fact, your daily life is the most profound method of all, the method of karma yoga. It's the method of waking up through everything that happens. You're drinking root beer and you say, wow, dig that. And you put yourself down and you say, damn you, you're drinking root beer again, and then you say, wow, dig that. You dig the judge. Oh boy, have we got judges. Oh, here come the judge. Boy, he's been around, and he's not just coming, he's coming and going. He's got a superego, it's called. Internalized values. We can't practically do anything without judging it. The flower, is it pretty? Is it pretty? You can't almost look at the flower without evaluating it. It's very hard for you to sit here and just be here, let all this stuff happen without judging. Is it good? Is it right? Is it wrong? Will it help me? That's the trap. That's part of the trap. And so what gets really exquisite is not when you dig root beer, but when you start to watch your own thoughts. When you realize that thoughts are like birds flying across the blue sky. And when you realize that when you're finally along in the journey, you'll notice that your mind is completely empty. You are mindlessly doing what you're doing. Just become a vegetable. Mindlessly floating along. It's all happening. It's all happening. Wow. No doer. It's just happening. No doer. No doer. Buddha says as long as there is a doer, you are still stuck on the wheel of births and deaths. No doer. No doer at all. It's all happening. This is just happening. We are all witnesses to this happening. Life is a happening. Right? Monstrous happening. People ask, how do I go on with my studies? If I believe this, what do I do next? You be next. You're doing it right now. There's no next, it's right now. Right now. Everything you're doing is a vehicle to wake up. What do? I do a thing called Ashtanga Yoga. If you want to read about it, there are books that they're called Raja Yoga. One book's called, a little book called How to Know God by Pravananda Nishwar. They're all concerned with a set of early writings, sutras by Patanjali. And the Patanjali sutras were written maybe 500 BC to 500 AD, somewhere in there. They're from older ideas. And this business, this technique of yoga merely says, yoga is so exquisite. It's not like body beautiful, like most Westerners think of yoga. When I came to Los Angeles from India, I was sitting in the American Airlines terminal between planes,
I mean, this was so far out after having been in the Himalayas and, you know, living in the Bible for the last 8 months, and suddenly you're in the American Airlines super plastic domain and you're, you know, sitting with a beard and a dress, barefooted in American Airlines. Some soldiers came up on the way back from Vietnam. They looked at me very... I don't know how. And they said, "What do you think you are, some kind of a yogurt?" Out of the mouths of babes. So profound. Yoga means union. Yoga is a systematic method for cutting through the game, for cutting through the illusion. I mean, if you're doing hatha yoga, you're not just getting your body beautiful. What you're doing is turning your body into a vehicle for prayer for transcendence of ego. Every asana is a perfect mudra, is a perfect statement of form, just like a beautiful work of art. And you put your body in that place and you center and you go outside of your ego and the body becomes a statement of a higher thing. That's what hatha yoga is at its highest. Hatha means the conjunction of the moon and the sun. Very high form of yoga. Bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and of worship. Boy, if there's any yoga that is groovy for we heavy minds, it's bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is the way in the Kali Yuga, Allen Ginsberg chants. And he's right, man. It's absolutely true. Love is such a powerful technique to get high, you can't believe it. Not interpersonal love. Not the love of Sadie and Frank. Not yin and yang love. Not lust. Not subject-object love, not I love her or him or it, but we are love. Be love. It's very simple. Just be love. See? Love equals energy equals consciousness. Remember that? Be love. Simple enough. Try it. It's very far out. No attachment. You don't need anything. You don't need anybody to love you. You are love. Everybody around you feels your warmth, your light, your love, because you're just being love, man. You just turn into liquid love. Because everybody you look at is that same place. I mean, if I dig that it's all illusion, you're in the illusion as much as me. When I look at you, do I see your illusion? No, I look right through the illusion. I see the love. I see the light. You are love, too. So I look at love like, here we are. We're love. So it's no come on. I'm not saying, come on and love me, baby. Do you love me enough? I'll love you if you love me. None of that. That isn't the level of love. It's the sea of love. It's the be of love. The be of love. It's a be-in. Be-in. Be-in here. Human being. You man be-in here and now. You man be-in. Bhakti yoga. Gyan yoga. The yoga of meditation. The beautiful yoga of the mind going beyond the mind. You calm the mind down and down and down until you bring it down to one-pointedness. Then like a laser beam, you turn it in on itself and you burn right through the middle. And you go behind the thought of I. You go behind the mind. Zen Buddhism. All kinds of monistic upayas or methods. Ramana Maharshi. So on. Called Gyan Yoga, Vedanta Gyan Yoga. Gyan Yoga. I mean, New York City is absolutely crawling with opportunities. You know, they're weird little places. And a lot of them aren't pure enough. And it's up to you to be in it and see what you can get from it and be with it and be open to it. And if you don't feel the vibes are good, be compassionate. You don't have to sit and evaluate. You'll just hear what you can hear. You'll get the message you can get a message from. I mean, I can go to the Baptist or Methodist church up in New Hampshire And I can get a great message, although they don't even know they're sending it anymore. The trip is not necessarily Eastern. I'm not here as an advertisement for anybody to go to India. If you go to India, most likely you're not going to find anything anyway. That's the fact of the matter. I mean, of the hundreds of Westerners I met that have gone to India, come back, or are in India, hardly any ever, nothing much happens to them. You're just as likely to find it on Avenue A or in Central Park West as you are in India at this point. If you know what you're looking for, the messages are all around. You don't have to go anywhere except inside yourself, and you can do that sitting in your own room by lighting a candle and an incense and surrounding yourself with the books of Ramakrishna and Buddha and Ramana Maharshi and the Tao and the Kabbalah and the Egyptian Gnostics and on and on in the Bible, and just hang out with those guys. That's who I hang out with. That's my buddies. I hang out in my meditation room. It's my hangout room. It's full of incense and candles and groovy people, and this is my puja table. And wherever I go, if I go into a motel, I got a little portable puja table. I set it up, light my candles, incense, put out there's Buddha, Christ, and my guru, and Ramakrishna, Taya de Chardin. All kinds of Maya Baba. All kinds of groovy cats. And then I sit down and here we are, we're home again. Traps, they're all aids, they're all crutches. This is a crutch. It's all a crutch. It's all right, these are crutches. We need them at this point. Create it right in your own house, right in the place where you are. There's your vehicle. Right in your own room, right by your bed. It can be purely Western. It doesn't have to be Eastern at all. It doesn't have to have Eastern words or anything like that. As far as mantras, if you want to use mantra, which is repeating something to center you through a verbal thing, you can pick any mantra that you can feel the faith in its possibility. You don't have to be assigned a secret mantra. Use Rama. Rama is the highest mantra. My guru uses only Rama. I use Rama most of the time. Rama, Rama, Rama. Use Oma Hung Vajra Guru Pedne Siddhi Hung. Use Guru Rinpoche. Om Manne Pedme Hung, a Tibetan mantra. That's all written about in Foundations of Tibetan Buddhism by Anagarika Govinda, Lama Govinda. Lots of mantras around if you want to center through sound. It's all available to you. It's all available to you. No cause for panic. You don't have to hold on to anything. I mean, this evening is now, we are completing this phase, we're about to sing bhajan. We don't have to hold on to it. We don't have to hold on to this evening or anything. We can let it all pass through us, watch it with love, compassion, and awe. There's no parting, there's no coming, there's no going, there's no loss. Don't get caught in the drama. Just another drama. Watch yourself, watch it all. As you go out on the street, wherever you go, just watch it all. At this stage every evening, we sing bhajan. And we sing bhajan. Bhajan is a technique of repeating song, a simple phrase of God over and over again as a technique of centering. It's a technique of putting your mind in a place behind, putting your mind in a place behind ego. When you do bhajan, it's not to sound beautiful necessarily. There's no aesthetic. It is aesthetically extraordinarily beautiful. But you don't do it for the aesthetic. You do it because it just happens inside. We will sing it if you feel into singing it, sing it. If you don't feel into singing it, don't sing it. There's no pressure. No pressure at all. It goes on as long as it goes on, and then it stops. And after it stops, there is silence. Silence here and silence downstairs until you're out on the street. And remember, as Hakuin said in Zen, Zazen Wasan, when you understand that form is the form of the formless, your coming and going takes place nowhere else but where you are. When you understand that thought is the thought of the thoughtless, your singing and dancing is no other than the voice of the Dharma, the voice of the way, the voice of the path. The bhajan we will sing tonight is 2 and 4 and about Rama. Ram is an incarnation of God at a very pure yuga, at a very pure time. He is our very selves. He's Guru Rinpoche. He is the God of sun. He resides in our heart. When you're singing to yourself. You're singing to your own heart, to your own true self. When you sing it with enough love, you merge with that which you love. You merge with your beloved. Lover and beloved become one. That's the way bhajan works. It's all part of bhakti yoga.
Rama, 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 Rama. Rama, 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 Rama. Rama, 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 Rama. Rama, 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 R